Hello, everybody. It's Leslie Jane Seymour, and I'm here for Reinvent Yourself. And wow, this is really fun. I have somebody, the name D'Artagnan in food, I have followed for a very long time. You probably have as well. They are French organic products that you can buy, everything from choucroute to all kinds of French meals in a jar, beautifully done, pâtés, everything that you can imagine that's super French and really French, but you buy them here in the United States. And I always wondered, where do they come from? I thought they were imported from France, but they are not. They are actually the product of Ariane Dogant, who came from a restaurateur family of seven generations in Gascony. And she left France mainly because the business was going to be turned over to her brother, because that's just the way it was always done, is that the boy always took over the business. But she had a business brain and she wanted to do her own thing. So she came to the United States and she launched her own brand, which is the reason why it's called D'Artagnan. The reason why you know the name is because that's the name of one of the musketeers. And apparently, the musketeers come from Gascony, which is where she was raised. And the whole idea of all for one and one for all became her motto, and how she lives and how she creates her business and how she takes care of her employees and how she takes care of the animals that she sells as well. So it's a wonderful story. And it's also a wonderful story about being a single mother and how she raised her child all by herself, and about teaching her child to eat real food. Instead of, she was horrified by the baby food she was told to give her baby. And then also how to work with her daughter as she's getting older. Her daughter decided not to go into the same business, but wanted to be an architect. And what's wonderful is they've got a whole business that they're working on together, which might be something that you'd want to see. Or we could have a little Cubby Club retreat too, which is a organic farm in upstate New York. Anyway, I think you're going to totally love listening to Ariane, and I hope you enjoy this conversation. So thank you, Ariane. We're so glad to have you. Thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about where you grew up and what you studied. People like to know people's history. And talk a little bit about your father, who is in a similar business, in just short detail, so we know where you're coming from and how you made your way over to the U.S.
Well, I come from a family of restaurateurs forever. I'm the seventh generation of restaurateurs. And I left Auch, capital of Gascony in southwest France, because my the last generation, my parents, had the hotel restaurant there where I grew up with my brother and my little sister, and where I learned everything about food the right way, you know, going after and looking at the farmers, the people who were raising produce and animals for my father, or were gathering mushrooms in the forest. But it was clear, it was always clear while I was growing up, that my brother, 1 year younger, will be the one taking over the business one day. It's just how things were done at that time. You know, the girl has the probability of leaving the house and following a man, where the boy would be taking over the business. So it wasn't said, but I think it was resented a little bit inside. And combined with that, I always had that love of discovery and of America. And I saw America like the land of cowboys, you know, the guys on the horseback gathering the cattle and the saloon, and that was, for me, that was America. And I love, but I also love the idea of America and the United States as a country that was really behind their leader and united and doing great things the right way just before, because they are united. In Gascony, we have that. It's called All for One, One for All. It's this motto. It's this direction that the Musketeers, led by D'Artagnan, who was the captain of the Musketeers under Louis XIV, that was their motto, and they live by that. And so in Gascony, where we all think we're descendants of D'Artagnan, and we might very well be, he was a very active guy. So in Gascony, we take that motto at heart. And when I came here and started the business, that was something that culturally stayed with me all the time, because I knew this country, America, was doing the All for One, One for All even better than any musketeers in France. And so I kept that all those years. D'Artagnan is now 35 years old. And to this day, today we have 260 employees. We're at $132 million sales. I mean, that was last year. This year we were running for 150, and it's not going to happen anymore. But with all our heart, with all the employees that have been here forever, this is what we're all about. All for one, one for all. And I think it creates a culture of loyalty and of heart. And that's why, you know, at D'Artagnan, we specialize in delivering good meats and providing good meats that we source from farmers to whom we give the specs to mostly restaurants and also retailers and consumers. And so since the confinement, of course, all the restaurants, 75% of our business has closed, and we're reinventing ourselves and trying to compensate with much more sales in retail and much more sales in the e-commerce world. It's difficult. It's happening, but it's not compensating enough. I mean, we're bailing water out, but thank God we had that that loan, the PPP loan, and that allows us to see coming up until end of June. Then wow. For the summer, we'll have to. I mean, we're looking at a lot of scenarios for the summer.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, that explains then, I was going to ask you about the history of the D'Artagnan name. Now I understand it. I didn't know it was related to Gascony like that. That's fantastic. So you are in a very different situation than I'm guessing, you know, where we're seeing all these problems with the meatpacking plants and all of that. So you've been organic. Can you talk a little bit about that history for yourself and how that was progressing before the pandemic and how you see that going after?
Yeah, I mean, it's been 35 years of experience. And at the very beginning, we didn't know what we were doing. Today, we still don't know what we're doing, but a little less, you know. We do have some ideas of what we're doing. Up until now, we had a whole team of purchasers who were able to forecast not only the number of animals, but to try to balance the cuts between the different markets for the animal. Because when you look at the beef, for example, you don't look at just ground meat. You look at ribeyes and strip loins and tenderloins and culotte and top rounds. And you do have to take that into account to find buyers for it. But at the source, there are farmers and ranchers. And by the way, they are the ones who are suffering the most right now. I mean, I don't want to diminish the restaurant world that is closed, and it is terrible for all the employees. The farmers are also kind of the forgotten people in the story, and they are being hit really hard right now. But our job in the middle, we're the middle link in that food chain, is to explain to the farmers how to raise animals. So we try as much as possible to have heritage breeds raised. That takes a little longer, but that gives a better taste, whether it's poultry or meat, and in an environment that is natural. So plenty of space to roam around, that gives muscle, that gives a good taste, and absolutely no medication whatsoever. No growth hormones, no antibiotics, no medication whatsoever. And that way, we are certain that we have the best meat and poultry available. Then our responsibility is to own the logistics. So from the farmers and ranchers, it goes to the processing plant. From the processing plant, then we take over with our refrigerated trucks. We bring it to our 5 distribution centers. Our main bigger one is here in Union, New Jersey. But we also have distribution centers in Denver, Colorado, Houston, Texas, Chicago, Illinois, and Atlanta, Georgia. And from those distribution centers, we dispatch it with our own trucks. I have 76 trucks. Sometimes I think we're a trucking company. I own a trucking company, but it's a lot of trucks. And so we dispatch to Delhi, to the restaurants and the retail stores around. And we leave the e-commerce to third-party carriers like FedEx or UPS. So that was before the confinement. And right, that's my job.
So now it will switch more to consumer, or what will you do? Well, how will you organize that?
So we are putting all our investment, all our labor, all our resources in e-commerce and retail. We didn't lay off one person. So all the salespeople, we have 50 salespeople in food service, they all switch to retail and e-commerce. And so we went for the independent retailers, the small ones, and then the bigger ones, the chains. And on e-commerce, we figured, hey, we have all those trucks, they are idle, they are right here, idle on the parking lot. We have all these drivers. Why don't we try to deliver ourselves in those regions where it's possible, the consumers? Because up until now, we left it to a third-party carrier simply because it was small packages, so lesser value in the packages, and much more labor intensive, you know, going up in buildings or ringing the bell and waiting for people. And so we started that 2 weeks ago, and this has been like a brush fire. This has been growing really exponentially, and I'm so happy because it gives us something to do. You know, it does not compensate, but at least it does create some cash flow. And that way the drivers are busy, the trucks are on the road, and we're doing something. That's the plan.
Let's talk a little bit about being a female. And it's funny, every single interview I do, doesn't matter what sector it is, it's always a story about being one of the first female people in a all male dominated industry. So can you talk a little bit about what you ran into in the meat industry as a woman, just briefly? So, and if you have a funny story or interesting story, that's always good.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe before being a female, I'm a French person. And so I think that trumps that, because at the very beginning, 35 years ago, when you were in the food business and you were French, naturally, for good or bad or for right or wrong, naturally, you were assumed to know better than the person in front of you. So because of that, even though I was a woman, I was accepted and respected by the chefs, my clients. At the time, it was 100% chef-oriented in the company. So I never had backlash seriously from the fact that I was a female. There was a time because I decided to raise my daughter alone. There was a time when I could see the eye of the reprobation in some people's eyes, but not really in my world, not really in the food world. They absolutely respected that. And I, as I say, I have more positive stories than negative based on that.
That's wonderful. But you did start the prestigious women's chef group. Was that, what was the purpose of that then?
Yes, because that was international. I saw my friends in France, in Luxembourg, in Italy, and they didn't have the same perspective than I did. They had it very, very difficult. And by the way, I'm talking about my job as a supplier, a purveyor of meats and poultry. But when I see my colleagues, female colleagues in the restaurant world, trying to open a restaurant, trying to be a chef, and first trying to be a cook in a world of men in the kitchens, that's a very different situation. And they needed support and they needed help. I absolutely remember when in my roster of clients in New York City, I had only one client who was a woman. The restaurant name was Arcadia, and the woman was Anne Rosenzweig. She was a miniature woman, but she had the gusto to be able to get respect around her. But you realize, only out of all the restaurants 30 years ago, there was only one woman chef out there. It's very different today. And I'm glad that there has been a lot of progress, and we're not done, but it's very different today. And so that's why in these times, with my friend Hélène Darroze, who's in Paris, and Caroline Rostand and Anne-Sophie Pic, we decided to put this group together, and we would have fun. It would be a great excuse to meet once or twice a year in a prestigious place, do a dinner all together, and I would be cooking duck and they would be cooking other things, and we would have like one of those big degustations dinners, and we would give the proceeds to a charity having to do with kids and children, and we had a grand time this way. And then we started having our own kids, and so this started to fade a little bit because we were busy doing other things, plus having, you know, being busy at home. Plus, I must say, especially on this side of the ocean, we started to see strong associations, much more structured than what we were doing, and really working hard for the advancement of women in the chef and restaurateurs world. And so I joined them rather than continuing to, you know, do something that was a lot of work and rewarding because it was fun, but the effects were not that great.
Can you talk a little bit about raising your daughter and launching this amazing business at the same time? I mean, that's one of the big issues for women, is they're left to do most of the child raising and their business at the same time. What did you learn, and what secrets or tricks did you have?
So having my daughter was like starting the business. I didn't know what I was doing. And I cannot, I mean, you can ask any woman, you can read every book in the world. When it's time and when you're delivering that baby and you don't know what you're doing, and somebody has to show you for the first time how to breastfeed and how to take care of the baby. And so I took it to heart that that baby was the most precious thing in the world, and that that baby would have to be happy. And that's all I care about, that that baby be happy. And before being happy, it has to be safe and and then happy. So I breastfed Alix a very long time. I think up until almost 2 years old, she was still breastfeeding a little bit. But she also started to eat real food very early on. And I remember at the time I was living in Jersey City, New Jersey. And the doctor that was designated by my insurance, the pediatrician there, was, you know, we were not in that great of a neighborhood. And so two things happened there. The first time I met that pediatrician, the first thing is that, okay, so Alix's name is Alix, A-L-I-X. So the nurse shows us inside, you know, the room where you're supposed to get your kid naked and to put your kid standing up on that examination table. That's what we did. Then the doctor arrives and he has in front of him the file and he's reading the file. And so in the file, I don't know if there was a misspelling or if he just read it really fast, he saw Alix, maybe saw Alex instead of Alix. And without raising his eyes, he told me, "Good morning, ma'am. How is he today?" And so that was my experience with an American doctor. And so I said, "Good morning, doctor. If you don't know the difference between a male and a female, I don't think you're the right one for us."
Oh my God, yeah, terrible. Yeah.
And so then he raised his eyes, he saw his mistake and he was confused and he was, you know, and he apologized. But that, you know, it was just a mistake because but it just shows, you know, how busy and how not caring this guy was. And then at the end of the examination, he said, "Okay, she's in good shape, everything is all right. By the way, maybe it's, I think she was in her fourth month, it's maybe time to start feeding real food," which I had started already, but you know, I read my own book, but I was listening to him. And he said, "Okay, so I think it's time for you to give her one meat and two vegetables." So I said, "What do you mean, one meat and two vegetables? What does that mean? I don't understand what that means. One meat, one whole beef, one piece of leg, what does that mean?" And he said, "Well, that means one little jar of baby food, of meat, and two little jars of vegetables." And it was flabbergasting, you know, it was, how dare for somebody who cares for the health of people to encourage you to buy sterilized food in a little jar? Why don't the doctors or this one in particular, why isn't he encouraging people to actually make their own food, wholesome, fresh, from vegetables that they would find in the market? It was mind-boggling how, you know, the lack of priority of getting wholesome food. And I knew that of adults, but of course it started somewhere and it started there. So meanwhile, Alix was following me all over, between breastfeeding and traveling for business. And so we got this in this habit of going to restaurants, and she would be very well behaved up until a certain age. And I would carry with me a little grinder. And so everything I was eating, I would put in the grinder and give it to her too. And being very careful, you know, doing one meat at one different species at a time, one different vegetables or fruit at the time, so that if she were to be allergic to something, I could identify it right away. Thank God she wasn't. And we spent the next, up until she was a teenager, like that, you know, glued at the hip, and her doing everything that I was doing when I was doing cooking lessons or being hired to do demonstrations. She was here. She was here helping out and just passing the plates and looking at me doing it. And to this day, she loves good food. She's now 32 years old. She loves good food. She loves to cook. And she has absolutely no taste for fast food. And I never forbid her. It's just, you know, she doesn't like sweet sodas, and she doesn't like processed food that have a lot of chemicals in it by taste. And I'm very, very proud of that.
And I read that you were hoping she would go into the business, but she didn't.
So first she went to Cornell. She graduated in food science and hotel management. And the day of the graduation, I figured that's it. I have it made, you know, she graduated. Now she's going to come with me. And the first thing she said coming out of the ceremony was, you know, ma'am, I'm not ready for the active world. And I really would like to explore. I think I want to be an architect. And that was a big blow. And of course, she had researched it already. And she wanted to do her master in architecture in San Francisco, meaning the farthest way possible for me. And that was a huge blow. And so far, I didn't see her anymore for 6 years, except when I would take a plane and go on the West Coast. And she got her architecture diploma. And eventually, she came back to New York. And last year, end of last year, we decided together to put something in place, a foundation under the D'Artagnan umbrella, and to put in place a farm where we would raise animals and vegetables and fruits, you know, a real farm, polyculture, under the permaculture principles. So growing trees, making silvopastures, and trying to educate people about this. So being open to the public, and teaching people how to milk a cow, how to make cheese with it, how to take care of bees, how to make honey, how to make jams, how to cure and ferment, to cure meats or ferment vegetables. So we're in the process of, we have the farm, we bought the farm. It's beautiful, it's upstate New York, an hour away from here, and we're making renovations in there to have it ready for exactly that goal and that mission.
I love that. So do you have a sense of when you'll open?
I had a sense a month ago. I don't have a sense anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll be open to the public. It'll be something that we can all see and visit.
Yeah. I think the farm stand is going to be very fast. It's going to be within a year because we are putting the gardening in place, the silvopasture, we are planting the trees, we're getting the smaller animals, chickens, ducks, geese, rabbits, geese right now. So there will be things to produce and to show and to transform very soon. So that's within a year. We also wanted a little restaurant in there. We wanted a big greenhouse. So this is going to take a little longer. The investment is made on the property, but the additional investments to do all those renovations are going to take more time than we initially thought. I want to be very prudent. And while we're doing all kind of scenarios here at D'Artagnan to try to look at the future, and it's very difficult. I'm doing the same thing, and we're doing the same thing at the farm, where, you know, what can we do so that we had big ideas, and now we're trying to keep the big ideas, but with a smaller investment.
Okay, well, we'll look for that. So in closing, Ariane, What advice would you give to anybody wanting to launch into this type of business? What would you say to beware of or avoid? Obviously, being French in the food business would be helpful. Maybe you have to get a fake French accent if you are American. But
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I mean, you can. I can give you lessons in the French accent. That's right. What I know. No, but seriously, I think the biggest, as a business person, the biggest thing that you need to do is to surround yourself with people smarter than you. That's the number one thing. Okay, because there are, as you grow, there are corners of the business that you are not a specialist about. And so if you have the big idea, the big mission at the beginning and the drive, your biggest asset personally is your heart and your drive. And that you cannot lose, and that's why the business needs you, okay? But if you want to grow and be sustainable, you need to have people who are smarter than you in all those specialties around that are going to grow as satellites like that. And so that's the most important thing, really. Stick to your guns. You know, you have a good idea, you're going to make it. But also don't hesitate to share the wealth by hiring the most competent people you can afford.
Super. Any other thoughts for us as we go in terms of balancing and having a family at the same time and having your own business, which is totally amazing? I mean, I've known about D'Artagnan for a long time. I did not know your history, so this is wonderful.
Well, I don't know. Mother's Day is around the corner. Please think about your mother. And I hope you'll find something on D'Artagnan website that will please her. And
Oh, it's a great idea. I love that. And when will the where will the farm be when it opens? Where is it?
It's in Goshen, New York. It's exactly 1 hour away. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. The name of the farm is All for One, One for All.
That's so cute. Yeah. Okay. Oh, I love it. Well, that's great. We'll keep an eye on that for you, and we'll drag the Covey Club up there. This is a whole group of women who support women.
Yes, and, please. Yes.
And we have events, and when the events open up again, we actually do virtual events and live events. So maybe we can drag a bunch of people up there, which would be really fun when we can all touch each other and hug each other and say thank you for doing what you do. So I'm so glad to meet you, and we will stay in touch, and we will watch, and I hope everybody will check out your products, though I'm sure an awful lot of people already know the name. I did. And thank you so much, Ariane, for your time. We really appreciate it, for sure.
No, thank you. Really, thank you. That was very pleasing.
Great. So thank you all for listening to Reinvent Yourself. I just love the fact that somebody comes to the U.S. to reinvent themselves, and they live their dream, and they're female, and they have this wonderful relationship with their daughter. I think it's a perfect example of how you have to live your dream and how you can go forward like that. And I hope you enjoyed this. If you enjoyed this discussion, I hope you'll subscribe to Reinvent Yourself. I hope you'll also join us over at Covey Club. We have wonderful discussions like this, both in writing, and then we have tons and tons and tons of virtual events that we are doing now, where we bring in the biggest experts to talk to you about how to improve your life. And we are broadcasting those 5 times a week now. For 1 hour between 8 and 9 Eastern Standard Time. You can find those under the attend page and the attend click on the website. And I hope also that if you enjoy Reinvent Yourself, you will leave us a review or leave us a question or give us some stars. That always helps other people find us. And come back. We will be with you once a week, as always. and take care. Have a great week.